You might think, as you were watching that the freeze frames of Aaron's face were, first of all, freeze frames. They were not. Second of all, that's just certainly just one clip that we just transposed to all the responses. Nope, that was all separate live footage. That's how he was the entire. It's how he is right now. I just looked over at him. Boy, was that a mistake. This morning we start a new series, preseason, and just so I'm making sure the bases are covered, that was satire, all right? We don't actually talk like that. I made up DPP, although that does sound like something we should track. What ushers are getting the most dollars per pass down the aisles? But that was just an opportunity for us to have a little fun. There was several more less appropriate jokes that mercifully Aaron edited out when he put the video together. But anyways, we're entering into a series called Preseason, and I want to tell you why it's called Preseason and kind of how I had the idea for this series and what it's all about. A few years ago, as we do every year, but a few years ago, I was going through the time of the year when we do performance evaluations for all the staff. Believe it or not, that's a thing that we do here. I get evaluated annually by a portion of the elder board, which has actually begun. That process is underway. So if you have anything that you think needs to be brought up in that process, feel free to mention it to Brad Gwynn, and that'll get right in there. But excuse me. I was in that process, and there was something weird to me about the process because the way that it worked with the calendar is to kind of get ready for the fiscal year. We had to start doing evaluations in October. And so every October, I'd sit down with each staff member and just kind of go through the previous year. How did we do? What were our goals? Did we meet the goals? And then say, okay, well, let's set some goals for this upcoming year. And it was always an odd thing because we're talking through the goals in October. They're going to be implemented in November and then assessed next October. And that was fine for to have ready for our fiscal year as we consider compensation entering into the new year and all that stuff. That's why we timed in October, so it'd be ready for December so we could start new stuff in January. But the church calendar really doesn't follow the fiscal year. And so I kind of thought it was odd because we follow as a staff something that I've always referred to as the ministry year. And in my head, the ministry year goes from September, really Labor Day, to Memorial Day. And so for me, it was weird to be developing goals for the staff that were going to be implemented in November, really needed to be accomplished by May of the following year. And then we kind of start nebulously in September and don't really get traction for the new year until November. So I was like, we need to switch all this, start doing evaluations in August so we can be ready to go for the ministry year that starts in September. Now, this is why I'm bringing it up to you, because I think it's high time you guys know that this is how we think about church. So as your staff, and this morning, I just want to let you know that I'm talking to the partners of Grace this morning. If you are a part of Grace, if you're a Grace person, then I am absolutely talking to you. If you're not a Grace person yet, if you're here, you're kicking the tires, you got invited, you don't know, we want you to take all the time you want to take to decide whether or not you want to be a part of what God is doing here, or if you want to take your talents elsewhere. That's totally up to you. And this morning, we'll give you a good insight into who we are and how we think about church. But two things about this morning that are a little bit different. First, this is not really a sermon. In the way that I think about them. This is more like a family meeting to invite you guys in to how we want to think about church together as we begin to enter the ministry year. So that's what I wanted to tell you guys, our Grace partners, is the ministry year really runs from Labor Day to Memorial Day, and here's why. September is a big month. Everybody's back to school. schedules are mercifully regulated. It's not the willy-nilly nature of the summertime that I hate. I hate the deregularity of the dysregulation of the summer and the schedule. I hate the fact that I can't just get in my car to go to the grocery store without my back sweating before I get there. I loathe summer. It has nothing in me for it. There's nothing in my life that requires the temperature to ever be above 70 degrees. Do you guys think I'm trying to take this shirt off in public places? I don't need to do that. Let's just keep it cool. But I'm happy that summer is over. And my favorite thing about summer being over, followed closely by football is starting, is that schedules regulate and kind of the ministry year starts. Because everyone's kind of coming back from all their vacations, all their different things, and here we go. And even as we sit here in August, it's virtually full. It was virtually full last week, so we're gearing up for a ministry year here at Grace. And in September, we always have a big series. We always, I think, a lot about, gosh, what does the church need to hear? It's kind of, I will dog ear a topic for September, the November ahead of time. And just know what we're going to be getting to. And this September is no different. I've known for a long time what we're going to be talking about this fall. But September's a big series. Hit the ground running. Small groups go. We're doing Move Up Sunday. That's happening. Youth group picks back up. Everything just gets in motion and gets in gear. And then we kind of go pretty hard until Christmas time, because there's no let up. Everything's important. Everything's a big deal. There's no let up. We get to Christmas. We push through Christmas. At Grace, the last week of the calendar year, we skip church. That's to give staff a breather so we can take a week off and our volunteers a breather. And then we start back again in the new year. But see, that breather is 1 week, but I spend it traveling. It's not like really super restful. Then we get into January, and January's a big deal series too, because everybody's coming back to church, New Year's resolutions, the whole deal. Crowds, churches and gyms are very full in January. That's how it goes. And then we enter into February. We're in the springtime. There's momentum there. We're pushing to Easter. Easter brings its own momentum that carries to Mother's Day. And then we start winding down until the bottom drops out on Memorial Day and everybody goes to the beach, right? And then in the summertime, I tell the staff, hey, listen, you have a job that usually takes you 40, 50 hours a week, sometimes more, sometimes less. In the summertime, if you can get that job done in 25, 30 hours, get it done in 25 or 30 hours and take a breather. If you can take a day where you don't have to come into the office, you can just enjoy your life, enjoy your family, do that. Because we have to push hard September through May. And as I was thinking about this rhythm of ministry and how Grace works, I thought, you know, at Grace, we have partners. We don't have members. And we've said that for a long time, as long as I've been here, that we have partners. We don't have members. And the reason why, if you've never heard me say it before, if you simply need a reminder, is that in my estimation, members tend to consume and partners tend to contribute. And I'm not trying to be critical of any church that has membership. I'm not trying to be critical of you if you believe that churches should have members. If you're currently the member of another church, that's not at all my heart. I'm not seeking to critique anything. I'm just saying that at Grace, this is how we think about it. We don't have members because when you become a member of a place, you tend to kind of step back and look around and say, well, what are my rights and privileges afforded me as a member? What do I have access to? What do I get to consume? What privileges have I just bought into? But when you're a partner of some place, you go, how can I contribute? How do I make this better? How do I throw myself in the ring and help move us forward together? And so because we have partners at Grace, I wanted to take a Sunday and tell the partners, hey, this is how we think about church over there during the week when it's not the children's hallway. When it's the offices, when we have meetings with our committees and with our elders and with our various leadership teams, this is how we think about church. And so I want to invite you into that as well. That's why we're calling August preseason. We're getting our partners ready for the upcoming ministry year. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you about and invite you in as partners to think through is this idea. Partners adopt an ownership mentality. Partners adopt an ownership mentality. When you're an owner, you take more responsibility. When you're an owner and you walk in and there's some creamers on the floor or some wrappers on the floor at the coffee bar, you don't think to yourself, well, someone's volunteering here this morning, I'm sure they'll pick that up. You go, no, this is my lobby too, and you pick it up and you help. Owners think about how they can make it better without having to be asked. And what we want at Grace is a place where our partners come, but I want to invite you guys to begin to take ownership of Sunday mornings too, and how we can all be contributing to what God is trying to do here. Before I get too far down that road, I did want to make the point in asking you to do this and think about not just how can I volunteer in a specific way, which is what we're going to talk about next week, not just being like, well, I'm watching kids once a month, so I'm good, I'm contributing. And yes, you are. And yes, you are good. But I believe there's things that we can do every week to take ownership and show ownership in the church that we call home. Now, one caveat before I dive into this. I have said for a long time that I want Grace, and that we, the people of Grace, desire for Grace to be a triage unit for people with church hurt. In September, when we talk about the church and maybe why people don't trust the American church and how we can be the kind of church that rebuilds people's trust in what church can be, one of the weeks, we're going to talk about this idea of church hurt and how it happens. So I'm not going to deep dive too much in here, but I know for a fact, because I've talked to many of you, that people come in here with church hurt. They were used up and spit out at the previous place. They were made to think that they were friends or had relationships that really were contingent on how much they gave of themselves or of their resources or whatever it might be, or something hypocritical happened, or somebody lied to them, or somebody hurt them, or their child got mistreated, or their spouse got mistreated, or they got railroaded, or whatever it was. People have that. And so I've known from time to time that people come to Grace with church hurt. And my message to those of you who just don't even know about church anymore is simply this: come here and rest and be ministered to for as long as your soul needs. Take all the time you need to allow God to minister to you. I had a couple one time come, and they were kicking the tires in Grace, and they took me out to lunch like some people do when they're getting to know a church. They want to get to know the pastor as well. And they told me straight up, this is a place where we feel like we can heal. We don't think Grace is going to be our church long term, but we appreciate what's happening there, and we think that God can kind of stitch us back together there. And then one day when we're ready, we'll leave. And I said, that's great. And they came for about a year and a half. And at the end of that year and a half, they sent me a wonderful email that Grace is a place that allowed them to heal. They were ready to jump back into this other thing they felt called to. And I felt like that was wonderful. I loved that for them. So if you're here this morning and you need a place to just rest and just be ministered to, that is absolutely welcomed at Grace. And as another aside, I think we sometimes forget how powerful church can be. I've had the opportunity, very limited number of times. A few years ago when I was on sabbatical, I went to other churches to see if they were hiring, but no dice. This summer, while the staff was preaching, one Sunday it just worked out where I think Jen and the kids weren't feeling very well, and so it was just me. And so I went to another church. And every time I go to another church where I'm not responsible for anything, I'm just being honest, I can't get over how great you guys have it. It's amazing. Do you understand? You show up at a place. I'm being serious. You show up at a place, there's free coffee. They just made it for you. If you get here on time, you get a decent parking spot. If you don't, you have to park at BJ's or something. But you come here, if you have young kids, you drop your kids off with people you trust who have had background checks. You don't have to worry about them anymore. They're far enough away that you can't hear their screams. They can just cry all they want, and you can sit in here in perfect peace. And then there's talented people who have prepared a worship set, and I get to sing along with that, or I get to sit there and pray, or I get to not sing along with that. I get to do whatever I want to do. It's just a moment's peace. And then somebody preaches, and I just get to sit there. And it might be the only time in the week where my mind is quiet enough and still enough to just consider what God might have for me in that moment and just take it in. And every time I go to another church, I'm so blessed by the process of being ministered to that I don't know why you guys ever skip, if I'm being honest. What a tremendous blessing it is to go to church and not have to have anything to do with it. So I'd like to rob you of that blessing. I think we can have some things to do with it, but I think we can still be ministered to every week. Before I do that, I do want to kind of line it up like this. I believe that this communal effort into church is absolutely biblical, and it's actually how God builds things. One passage I'm going to turn to very quickly. You don't have to turn there. This is the seminal passage for church in the New Testament. If you want to know what church should look like at all, according to Scripture, Acts 2, verses 42 through 47 is the seminal passage. There is no other more clear passage. Jesus never talks about what church should look like except that we should make disciples, we should baptize people, and we should love one another like he loved us. That's the only thing Jesus says about the order of church. Everything else we get from Paul, but this is the one thing where if we want to be a church, this is what we should be. 42 through 47. They, being the early church, devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possession to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So listen, there's a ton of stuff that we could get into in that passage, none of which we have time for this morning. The larger point I want to make from that passage is church is fundamentally communal. It fundamentally takes everybody chipping in. If you read through that passage again and you look, they were meeting each other's homes daily. They were breaking bread daily, meaning they were preparing meals daily. They didn't forsake the gathering of themselves together, the assembling of themselves together. They were taught in the temple regularly. It is fundamentally together. Faith is fundamentally done together, and church is fundamentally executed together. And I think a really helpful example for how I believe God intends his church to be built can be found in the Old Testament book and story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is a hard book to find. It is just before the wisdom books. And if you don't know what the wisdom books are, I really don't like your chances for finding Nehemiah. So probably best to just lock in up here and we'll read the verses to you. I realized that now as I was trying to be conciliatory for this. If you don't know where Nehemiah is, don't beat yourself up. It's no big deal. It's a hard book to find. But instead, I came across like a jerk pretending like I knew where Nehemiah was, so I'm smart, and I'm very sorry about that. But it is okay if you don't know where Nehemiah is. But in this book, Nehemiah is a guy from Israel, but he's living in the Persian Empire under the reign of King Artaxerxes. And he realizes that he gets word that the walls of Jerusalem, his home city, have been torn down. And it is really just subject to the whims of those surrounding Jerusalem. And this particular story, the villain is a guy named Sanballat, which is one of the worst villain names ever. And so he goes, stricken with grief. Nehemiah goes to King Artaxerxes and he says, "Can I please have permission to go back and to rebuild the walls of my home city, Jerusalem?" And Artaxerxes grants him that right. He says, "Yeah, here's some letters to give to the governors of the provinces so you can get through the territory. Here's some stuff giving you rights to pull from the royal forests and quarries and get the materials you need to rebuild your wall. Go and rebuild it." So Nehemiah goes back and with the intention of rebuilding the wall. And he gets there, and he doesn't make it known what he's going to do. Rather, at night, he goes out, and he takes a survey. He processes everything, and he figures out what needs to be done. And at no point does he start telling everybody what to do. He just tells everybody, I've scanned the walls, and here's what needs to be done. And this is the response to Nehemiah saying, this is what needs to be done. I'm going to read this for a second. You'll get the picture. Nehemiah chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Eliashib, the high priest, and his fellow priests went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. They dedicated it and set its doors in place, building as far as the Tower of the Hundred, which they dedicated, and as far as the Tower of Hananel. The men of Jericho built the adjoining section, and Zachur, son of Imri, built the next of them. The fish gate was rebuilt by the sons of Hassanah. They laid its beams and put its doors and bolts and bars in place. Meremoth, son of Uriah, the son of Hakaz, repaired the next section next to him. Meshulam, son of Berechiah, the son of Okay, I'm done. All right. I thought I could do it. I'm tapping out. I wanted to read enough so that you would get the point. Family after family after family goes on for 20 more verses. Built from here to here. The Smiths built from here to here. The Williams is built from here to here. The Rector's built from here to here. The Winston's built from here to here. This is what they did. No one told them what to do. I don't think there was any meetings where Nehemiah put up a ProPresenter presentation and had an overlay of the current walls of Jerusalem versus the most recent walls of Jerusalem and how they were going to assign it. I don't think he looked at the Roburgs and said, you guys have this quadrant, and he didn't look at the Hounshells and say, you guys have to do this. He just put it in front of them. This wall needs to be rebuilt. And so some similarities I see is sometimes I see church staff, not in a way of grandeur, but just in a way of assigned purpose, mirroring kind of the role of Nehemiah here. God has sent us to build a church, and we carry some weight and responsibility in doing that. But Nehemiah would have been foolish if he set about laying the bricks on his own. I'm going to get this done, so get out of my way while I build the wall. No, he told the people of Israel, he told the people of Jerusalem, this is what needs to be done. And just like Nehemiah would have been foolish if he had tried to do it all himself, so would the people of the city have been foolish if they heaped all that on Nehemiah. As a church, we have to be in things together. Now, some of us, because we get paid to do it, should carry more weight, but everybody should have an ownership mentality where we are part of the group and we are trying to build this thing and push this church forward. And so in some senses, we should look around every Sunday as we think about our church. And we should say, what's my portion of the wall? What's my responsibility? And we'll leave off there later, but I want to get there. One of the things I want us to think about on a Sunday morning, you know, I think I've made it very clear, if you need to come here and rest, come here and rest. I'm not talking to you. I think I've made it very clear, I want you to be ministered to every week. It is my prayer for you every week, and it has not worn thin on me. It's not something that I just echo that doesn't mean anything yet. When it starts to feel that way, I will change it. I will ask God for a new prayer. But right now, I have prayed for you guys every week for 9 years that you would leave this place more desirous of Jesus than you were when you came this morning. That's my simple prayer for you every week. I pray other prayers for you, but as far as what I think about on a Sunday morning, and if you spent time here with us, we pray before the service. If I'm asked to pray, I usually pray, God, help us care about the things that you care about. Help us execute them perfectly if you care about them. And God, help us not care about the things you don't care about. That's why when something goes technically bad, like the announcements this morning, we just roll with it. And we say, okay. No, I'm just messing around. They're actually pretty good, Mikey. I had to get you back a little bit. And then I pray, and God, would the people who come here this morning leave more desirous of you than they were when they arrived. So I want you to be able to rest, and I want you to be ministered to, but partners, I also want you to minister on a Sunday morning, for you to notice little things that you can do. I brought up the coffee earlier. I think this is such a great example of just little ways to take ownership of what we're doing on a Sunday morning. A few years ago on a volunteer Sunday like what we're going to have next week, Mike and Holly Anderson, Holly is the lady up here singing, and Mike is her make-a-wish husband. They kind of raised their hands. They kind of raised their hands, and they said, we said, we need some people to do coffee. We haven't had, the people who did coffee, they can't do it anymore, so we need some people to serve the coffee every Sunday morning and oversee that team. And they raised their hands, and they said, we'll do it. And I've never thought much about the coffee. We have coffee in cups. If you don't like it, go pay for coffee somewhere. I don't care. But they care about it. And they care about it so much that without being told, they added the syrups to the coffee, which I assume are delicious. And then here's the thing that I noticed they did. If you have a cup that you got here, there's something written on it. You're forgiven. You're loved. Something encouraging. Those are not cups that we bought that have that on there. They take them home and write those messages on the cups to make that little corner of grace better so that we can, as a community, build God's church more. Stuff like this happens all the time. I've never trained the ushers on bringing in more chairs, but my boy Phil here, the head usher, nodding his head, anytime people need seats when it's getting close to time, he's the one rallying the troops. Nobody has to say anything. Nobody has to talk about it. He just goes and he gets the chairs and he puts them out and we make sure things go well. And grace is good at this. If I were to say to you at the end of this service, hey guys, we're going to have a lunch in here afterwards, the Palabra Fiel, the Spanish-speaking church that uses our facility in the afternoons, which that's a thing if you didn't know, they need all the chairs to be out and they need tables set up for 75 people. If I said that at the end of the service and I said, just stack the chairs, move them against the walls, we need some tables to be in here, we need tablecloths, we need the metal chairs from the hallway around the tables, that would be done in 5 minutes because you guys are amazing at that. So what I'm asking is we take that partnership mentality where we chip in and we think about how can I contribute to Sunday morning too. I got three practical ways for you. I'll move quickly through these. Three practical ways you can contribute to what God is doing here every Sunday while still allowing yourself to be ministered to. Here's the first one. This is very simple. Greet new people. If you're a longtime Grace person, greet new people. I'm gonna pick at you a little bit. I have heard from many of you in recent months something to this effect. Boy, that was a great service. Yeah, it was a good service. The sermon was amazing. I know. No, it really changed my life forever. No, I'm just messing around. People don't say that. But they said, this service was great. There was a lot of people there. I know, isn't that cool? It's just in the middle of the summer and there's a lot of people there. They're like, yeah, and so many faces that I haven't seen before. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing. That event was great. We had good turnout at that event. Yeah, wasn't it fun? Yeah, it was. There was a lot of new faces that I haven't seen before. Yeah, that's great. It's encouraging. But what I'm really thinking is, did you happen to say hey to any of them? Did you greet any of those new faces? Yeah. Yeah. See how you're not laughing? Whoopsies. Guys, if we see a face we don't recognize, go up and say hey to them. We want to be a friendly church. Do you know how many people visit a church, have a great experience? Parking was good. Coffee was good. Ushers were kind. Worship was good. Sermon was good. Everything was great. They leave and they go, I'm never going back to that place. Why? Well, because they're not friendly. Why are they not friendly? No one said hey to me. If it's that easy to be friendly and give the Spirit the opportunity to work in a life, why wouldn't we just extend a hand and be friendly? Guys, if you don't recognize a face, say hey to it. It's super easy. Find one new person, and you may be the new person. Maybe they're the old person. You'll just convict them for not coming very often. And say, hey. And I know that we're worried about, well, I don't know how long they've been coming. Maybe I've met them before and I've forgotten. So here, I'm going to give you, we're going to have a whole training video on how to greet new people, actually. in a couple of weeks. I think you guys are going to like that one. And in all honesty, after we got done shooting this Usher one, I looked at Gibby after everyone else left, and I was like, I don't think we have anything. He was like, yeah, we're going to have to reshoot it. But his editing was great, and we found some stuff. What was I talking about? Yeah, greeting people. Thank you. Here's my move on greeting somebody new that I'm not sure if I've met them before, but I know that I'm the pastor, so I should say hey to people. That's part of the deal, right? This is honed from 25 years of vocational ministry. I'm just giving you this for free. Right, here it is. If I know that I need to say hey to you, and I think maybe we've met before, but I'm not sure, I simply say, hey, I'm Nate. I'm not sure we've had the opportunity to meet. That's it. That's all you got to do. Now, sometimes they'll go, no, we haven't. My name's so-and-so, and then we talk. Sometimes they go, no, we've met. We met last week. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. Whatever. But here's why this is a good test. If you come to this church and you expect me or anyone to remember your name the first time we hear it, this is going to be a whirlwind of disappointment for you. And the sooner you can figure out we are not the right crowd, the better off you can be in finding where God wants you. If you get offended by me forgetting your name, buddy, buckle up. Hey, I'm Nate. I'm not sure if we've had the chance to meet. Greet new people. Okay, here's another one. The second way we can contribute on Sunday mornings, very simply, understand that your presence matters. Understand that your presence matters. In our newcomers class, Discover Grace, one of the things we ask of all people who are considering becoming partners of Grace is that you commit to Sunday morning attendance when you're in town, when you can make it. Your presence matters. If you were to bring a friend to church this fall, and you brought them in, and it's very full, it's very festive, it's very alive, it's really great. You're happy about that, right? If you bring them in, and there's 40 people in the room, and it just feels weird, and the closest person is where Mike is sitting, five rows back, and it just feels like this cavern between me and you guys, and it's very dead in here, and worship stinks no matter how good the song is, you're bummed that your friend is having that kind of experience. So even if you're not bringing a friend, even if you don't have anything to do, your presence matters. Your presence matters because when you show up week after week, other people show up week after week. Even if we don't get to talk every week, we see that this is important to you. It's important to me. Here's where your presence really matters, okay? I need to prime the pump a little bit for a thing that we might have to do that's like cuss words that I'm about to say. We may have to go to two services. Right. I know. So let's real quick just talk about, remember, family meeting, two services. That would have been funnier if you committed to it, Jacob. He started to walk out. He says, I opt for no services. Two services is not fun for anyone involved, okay? It's not. But here's the deal. We're redlining, and it's still the summer. We had like 190 people last week. There's not a lot of extra seats in here for one service. Our children's space is totally full. So we could very soon find ourselves at this crossroads as a church. Do we go to a second service, or do we just kind of go, you know what, community? We're done reaching and serving new people. We're going to just kind of button up, and who we have is who we have. Maybe you could talk to us about some trades. But for the most part, who we have is who we have. We're not going to grow anymore. That's really not an option. Two services is painful. It's painful for the people who serve in the band because they have to do it twice. It's painful for me because I have to preach at the 11 o'clock service and I don't even care anymore. It's painful for folks who have to decide what to do. It's most painful. I'm just going to put this out there. It is so painful for the 11 o'clock people. 11 o'clock people, when we go to two services, are my favorite people because that service is not as fun. Because we can still get a good 100, 125 people in here to still make it feel some energy there at the beginning. But then when we go to that second service and there's like 50 people in the room, it's like womp, womp. It's hard. But you have to push through. And if we're committed to this place together, then that may be a hurdle that we have to go through together. And if we do, your presence will really matter. Here's the last thing you can do every Sunday morning. Last thing you can do every Sunday morning. I highly want to encourage you to do this. This is something I've been doing in my own life, and I cannot believe what it has brought about. When you're ready to leave, which may be right now, when you're ready to leave, have one more interaction. Whenever you're ready to leave, you don't have to force it, but make space for one more interaction. I know. Now, some of you don't need to follow this advice. Just shut up and go home, okay? The people you are talking to are actively ready for you to stop talking so they can go home. You were there one more interaction, and they'd like it to be done. But that is a select few. A lot of you are kind of wired like me. When you're ready to go, you're ready to go. You've said the things, you've done the stuff, you're thinking about the next thing. But just let me encourage you. Slow down. When you're ready to go, open yourself up to one more interaction that you weren't planning on. You never know what God's going to do with that conversation. You never know the new people you might meet, the new small group connection you might make. What you might learn about someone that can connect them to someone else, because at Grace we connect people to Jesus and people to people. You never know what can come about from that one additional interaction. So just think about this for the next little while. When you're ready to leave church, you're ready to go, take a beat, open yourself up for one more interaction and see what God does with that. And then something I want you to think about as you come to church partners every week here this fall, and we move into our ministry year and we do this together, is simply this: what part of the wall can I build this week? What can I make better at Grace this week? Whose experience can I help? What can I see that can be done? What can I make better at Grace this week? What's my responsibility in the wall this week? All right, so we're inviting you into preseason. We're getting ready for the ministry year. Everybody's got a part to play. I hope God makes yours clear. Let me pray for us, and we'll continue. Father, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for what you're doing at Grace, for bringing folks in the summer as we prepare for the fall. God, I pray that we would faithfully execute the ministry that you give us every week. And God, I pray that even though we sometimes, by necessity, focus on the practical, that you would even speak through that and in some way, God, make us more desirous of you when we leave than when we got here. And God, I pray that would be true of us every week as we practice and minister here at Grace. In Jesus' name, amen.